He's a comedy fan.
He pulled
his car over on Santa Monica Boulevard. I was waiting in front of a weed store. And he pulled over and he goes, I saw you in front of this. His wife is Dominican. He's a sweetheart of a guy. He's very nice, but I've always been a fan. Like, he was telling me he was 14 when he did Apocalypse Now.
I'll tell you, when he, you ever see him on Black-ish? On this TV show?
I heard that show is fucking phenomenal.
The show is hilarious. But he's the grandfather. And he takes one scene every show, and he comes in, and he kills it, and he's gone. He just comes in, says the funniest shit in the show, and then he's out.
I haven't even watched it. I did see Gerard Carmichael's, and I'll tell you, that's
Carmichael's a great show.
Bro, fucking what's great his show. Name? What's his
Dag.
Name? What is it?
David Alan Greer, Dag.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah, but he's really funny.
Now, that's a guy, you talk about a talent who can do anything. I mean, anything.
Let's start with David Alan Greer. Hit it. Hit it. I want to rock right now. I'm my bass. I came to get down. What? What? Let's do it, Lisa Ann.
This show is brought to you by Onnit.com.
And Star One Edibles.
And Star One Edibles. Go to Onnit.com and also Star One Edibles. And use code word CHURCH to get 10% off your order of great optimization products like Alpha Brain, New Mood, ShroomTech Immune, ShroomTech Sport. It's code word CHURCH to get 10% off. Show is also brought to you by MeUndies. Go to MeUndies.com/Joey to get 20% off of your first order of men's and women's underwear, t-shirts, socks, and they're also offering you free shipping in the United States and Canada. Go to MeUndies.com/Joey.
That's the vehicle that I've been. That's the one I should have rode a long time ago. Oh shit, I feel it. You feel it? Oh shit, what do you got, Lee? What do you got, Lee? Oh shit, look at my shoulders, Lee. By the side. Oh shit, Lee. Lee, check it out. The other way. Coming at you, Lee. Oh shit. Oh shit. Oh shit. Oh shit. The church, bitches. Afternoon session. Alonzo Bowden, the Flying Jew. Oh shit. Oh. Fuck it, Lee, do it. The spirit's taking me, Lee. Oh shit. Oh fuck. What's happening, you bad motherfuckers? The church of what's happening now. Uncle Joey, Lee Syed, Alonzo Bowden, tremendous comedian. Thank you for coming in today.
Absolutely.
Listen, we're just going to start right this motherfucker off. We were talking about David Alan Greer. If you have not watched the Carmichaels, what's the name of it?
Yeah, Carmichael. The Carmichael Show.
He plays the father, and it's like, listen, a player comes into the league, they make a big wahoo about him when he's 21, he wins Rookie of the Year. For 3 years, he does really well. Then he gets hurt for 2 years, and then his wife leaves him, and he fucks the maid. So for 4 years, he bats .261, and he gets his 31 home runs, and but it's not, this motherfucker.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, one day he turns 30. He turns 30, and now he meets some fucking white woman. Something happens. that's what happened to me. I met a great little white woman. Everything's fine.
Everything changed.
And all of a sudden, bro, you go from hitting .261 to hitting .361, and nobody could figure it out. And it's because, you know what, man? Anything you do in life is peaks and valleys. But there comes to a point when everything you're doing is good. And if you watch that, that's what happened to David Alan Greer.
But, see, I don't even know if that happened to him or if he just didn't get that shot. There was a period where, because if you look at his career and look at what he's done, forget about In Living Color, because he killed that.
Now, that was 20 years ago.
He killed that.
Just to be around 20 years later.
But even look at early movies. Like, did you see Jumanji when he played the cop against Robin Williams? How long ago was that?
That's a long time.
And you just, and or Boomerang?
Boomerang, he was tremendous with the father.
And you're like, why didn't he get more movies? You know, it wasn't like he did anything wrong. Like, who knows how Hollywood works, but why didn't he get any movies for that period? But, and the other thing about David Alan Greer, he can kill it on either end, right? He can be funny, but then he can be real. You know, and now he's killing on the Carmichaels, and then he's going to do The Wiz live on TV. Like, you know how scary that shit is to be live on TV doing a musical? Like, how easy is that to fuck up?
Now, who else is in The Wiz?
I think Queen Latifah is going to be in it, and then I don't know who else is doing it, but they're redoing it live on, Dad kills it. Where I had the most respect for him? After he did Living Color, I don't know if he was a stand-up or if he did it, but he was like, he used to come to the Laugh Factory and just like work out, like play. And he said, man, they offered me a lot of money to do this shit. I got to learn how to do this shit. And I respected the fact that he said that and did that. Like, he became a good stand-up, because how many people would just ride on the TV fame and not give a shit about being funny? You know what I mean? Like, he came off the biggest show in the 90s, right? So he could have just gone on stage and said, hi, I'm David Alan Greer, and talk shit for 20 minutes, and they give him 50 grand. But he actually worked at becoming a great stand-up. So I got mad respect.
Well, if you watch him on the Carmichaels, one thing comes to mind, that he's a student of the game.
Mm-hmm.
All right. When you have a, there's two type of people that come, and get a check, and there's people that are student of the fucking game. They're the ones that you see on a sitcom 8 years ago, and all of a sudden they pop them in a movie and they kill it on something. You're like, damn, you thought that guy disappeared. Then you look up what he's been doing. He's been in France playing the bongos for a band. And that's what you do. Instead of fighting against the wave, see, a lot of people come off a TV show and then they're like, where's my shot?
Mm-hmm.
You just made $10 million in syndication. Go.
Yeah.
Go away. Go learn how to play the fucking drums. Go do something, because whatever they give you, you're going to force that hand. Unless you're the chick from Seinfeld or the chick from The Sopranos, the mother.
Right.
Right. They went right into another
sitcom.
Syndicated that motherfucker. Yeah. Here's another paycheck for you. The chick from Seinfeld.
No, I'll tell you the one. Katie Sagal from Married with Children.
That's right.
Has never not been on TV. Since that show, she's never not been on TV. She did Married with Children. Then she was the voice on that cartoon, Futurama. And then she had, like, Sons of Anarchy. And she had something else. Oh, wasn't she on the John Ritter series when John Ritter had his second
TV?
Yeah, she's never been off TV since Married with Children.
That's 30 fucking years,
yeah.
25 years.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, that's a career, this. That's what people do.
That's a career.
That's what people do. And you have to figure that you get that much better. Can you imagine Katie Sagal on the screen of Sons, on the set of Sons of Anarchy? She knew the whole fucking thing.
Yeah.
You walk, listen, man, I'm going to tell you something. You know, I'm honest with Lee. I tell you how it is. I got here to town. I was never an extra. You know, I just never saw the fucking thing for it. People kept coming up to me, man, we could put you in an extra. And I was like, I ain't come here to be a motherfucking extra. Let me try this stand-up shit out, and then I'll get back to you. And then you book shit, you know, and that was 1997, you know, the first time I booked a movie. And I gotta tell you, just for people at home, the first time I booked a movie, I had no idea what the fuck they were talking about, Alonzo. And I'm telling you both to your face, you know what movie it was? Mm-hmm. It was Basketball.
Yeah.
The movie with the fucking dudes from South Park.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're riding on this fame, and I'm sitting there thinking to myself, what the fuck am I doing? I got a roller skate, you know, and all this shit. And finally, I told them I ain't roller skating. But the day they called me, I ain't going to lie to nobody in this room. I didn't know action. I didn't know cut. I didn't know step on your mark. They kept saying, step on your mark. What are you talking about? What mark? What is this, a fucking race? I don't see no fucking marks here. What? I didn't know, Alonzo, nothing.
You know how I learned all that shit?
Tell me.
My first job, my day job, I used to be in airplanes. I used to be in aerospace. Right. I was an airplane mechanic. Then I started doing stand-up. I said, I'm not going to work on planes again. I just made a promise to myself, like, because if I did that, then I'd go back to it, you know, because it was money. Right, it was too easy. So my boy was working on the show Power Rangers, on the kids' show, and he calls me up, and he says, hey, man, can you drive a U-Haul? And I was like, yeah. He said, all right, that's the same size as a camera truck. I'm hiring you to drive the camera truck. And he got me on the show, and because I was on the crew, and you drive the truck and you park it. You know how it works.
Yeah, that's it.
Then you see drivers sit around all day, and I learned what everybody does. Like, I was like, that's when I learned, like, at the end of the movie, when you see all those crazy credits, you know, best boy, key grip, key makeup.
What the fuck is a best boy?
Right. The best boy is the assistant to the key grip.
And what's a key grip?
The key grip is the main grip, the main guy. He's the key guy.
I thought the director was the main guy.
No, of the grips. The grips is
sound,
like a crew.
Think, right? Is
the
lighting or sound?
No, grips are the guys who set up everything. Like when they say we're moving the scenes and they got to move lights and electrical shit and all that, you know, move the cameras and blah. That's all the grips. And you know why they call them grips? Because they grip shit. They grab it. I learned all of this shit just hanging around the set, talking to people, watching people, and you learn what they do. And that's how I learned everything about production. I learned being a truck driver on a production.
Alonzo, I knew, and this is for people at home, just so you know. Like, once I got basketball, I didn't know Dick. Then I shot Bronx County.
Yeah.
And I didn't know Dick. But the one that became evident, that I, and then after that, I went on the road for like 10 months, came back, and got into an acting class. Now, the acting class helped me, and then I booked a recurring plumber on an NBC show with a bunch of stars, kids. The kid from, was it Anger Management? Nah, one of those Adam Sandler movies that he played the steroid kid when he's in Hawaii. And he plays the brother to the fucking girl that's half retarded, and Adam Sandler's dating her. Whatever. You didn't watch that movie with Adam Sandler?
I know that movie.
You watch all that, that shit. Movie. You never watched that one?
Oh, 50 First Dates?
50 First Dates. That the white kid, he was in the show. It was Star's Kids. For some, Belafonte. Belafonte's Sherry daughter Belafonte. Was on the show. Oh, was, somebody else's daughter was on the
fine
show.
Fine with Sherry.
Oh, my Belafonte. God. It was fucking amazing. Sherry no. Belafonte. No. Sydney Poitier's daughter.
Oh, okay.
Sydney fucking Poitier's daughter was on the show. So I'm working with all these star shows. I'm the plumber. I booked episodes 6, 7, and 8. Alonzo was going to change my fucking career. I was already telling motherfuckers, listen, in 4 or 5 weeks, I'm bumping you motherfuckers.
Right? Isn't that how it feels, though? Whenever you get it, you feel like, yep, this is it.
Because when I came here in 1997, they go, here's the deal. You got on a TV show as a plumber. You do 4, 5, 6 episodes. Next thing you know, you're selling tickets. You go on the road.
Yeah.
You make money. Okay, so I get here. I shoot a fucking movie. It comes out. I get nothing. Nobody comes to see me. Then I shoot a pilot. It's going to be the biggest pilot in CBS history. It don't get picked up. How the fuck do you go from giving the director $1 million, it's gonna compete with NYPD Blue, and then it just don't get picked up?
Because that's how this business
works.
That's how this business works.
So now, boom. I pick up Mad TV. I still nothing crack a lax. Just some people go, hey, you were funny on Mad TV. But then all of a sudden I got a call from NBC. Go down there on a Monday. I didn't want to go down there. I'm like, I don't want to go down there and play no fucking Mexican plumber. And I walk in and the lady's like, what's the problem? I don't want to come read for this. You're not going to give me this. It's a waste of my time. And she goes, read the thing. And I read it. And she's like, read it again. You got to call back on Monday to producers. Next time, come in here with a better attitude. And I booked it. So now I got this fucking thing. And Alonzo, I swear to God, this is my third job in L.A. I got a SAG card.
Yeah.
So for you people at home that think that we're pulling miracles, and when you see this fucking dude on TV, I got hired. I didn't know nothing. I didn't know nothing, guys. I ain't going to lie to nobody. I remember them saying, Joey, some action cut, something about the line, the marker. And then finally somebody pulled me over and they're like, you did great in the audition. What the hell's going on with you? And I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing. They go, all right, they broke it down. And after that, I was good to go and shit. You know what I'm saying? But I didn't know nothing. Here I got 3 episodes on this NBC show. I didn't know nothing, Alonzo.
And nobody teaches you. They just assume when you walk in. You know, you're good at the hard part. The hard part is the audition. Once you get the job, you can do the job, and they'll work with you to do. But the hard part is that audition in the room. And I can't audition for shit.
You ever go to court, Doug?
Court?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You ever go in front of a judge?
Yeah.
It's a motherfucker, ain't it? The suspense. Same thing with an audition. See, I got good at an audition from going to court.
I should have went to court more often.
Yeah, that's the Uncle Joey way. It's the same difference, right?
Hey, kids, one more reason to break the law.
No.
You want an acting career?
No.
You drop out of school and start stealing shit right now.
Can you fucking believe that shit?
But for the late night TV commercial?
I just made it.
Hey, just petty shit, though. You don't want to do time. Shit. You want to be in front of
them. It's hilarious how it's the same thing. I always, when I go to a fucking audition and they make me sit outside, Lee, every minute I'm sitting there, I'm boiling.
I never heard that before.
I'm boiling. I start boiling, Alonzo. And I look at the people in the room, and I'll see somebody that's a star in a movie, like he did a big movie.
Yeah.
And then I start feeling bad about myself, right? Like, oh, fuck. This guy probably went to Juilliard. You know, I learned how to do comedy at a fucking halfway house and Vanachubbuck in the Comedy Store. You know, you just am watching Trains, Planes, and Automobiles in Sanford and Son. And all of a sudden, you start getting these doubts, and all of a sudden, my blood pressure starts going up, dog. And I'm like, you know what? I followed Paul Mooney for 2 years at the store at midnight. I did halftime of Buffalo Sabre game. You survived that shit, you can survive anything. Fuck this motherfucker. Fuck this bitch. That's how I got Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
I almost had a nervous breakdown in the auditioning room with Spider-Man 2. It went into overtime.
Mm-hmm.
You ever go to an audition, they're like, we're running late, and you're like 4:45, and you're still there at 6 o'clock. I got so pissed from being there. Lee, I'm thinking about the 405 traffic. I'm boiling. Then Paulie walks in from The Sopranos, the big guy from Ocean's 11. So I waited all the way here to 6 o'clock to fucking for these motherfuckers to walk in and bump me at the audition. When Paulie from The Sopranos walked out, I had a Yankee hat on. And that lady goes, Joey Diaz, you ready to read this? I go, yeah. And I was so fucking pissed that when I went back, I knocked the couch over. So she goes, do it again. And I go, you want me to knock the couch over? She goes, fuck yeah, let the director see what I just saw. The next day, boom, Spider-Man 2.
Bam.
And I got so pissed, Alonzo, from being there, like it was 4:45.
Yeah.
And you know, Sony.
Yeah.
You know what's going to Sony's like, dog. Yeah, getting out of fucking Sony, National Avenue there.
Yeah.
So usually
we. Especially at 6 o'clock.
Oh my God, but you know what? Your Uncle Joey, you make a right and go on to Venice and get some Cuban food on Versailles. Get the number 25, the carne con papa. Fuck yeah. What the fuck are you going to do in Venice? Go up against traffic? You get stuck down in Venice Boulevard, you're deep, deep. Where do you live? You live up here?
I live up here.
Oh, yeah. So you're deep. You get stuck down there at 4:45. What are you going to do? Sit in your car and call your agent, tell them how you know what? Let me go to Versailles. Let me at least make the fucking ride. It's like in the old days when they made you go to Abbot Kenny and down there. They had a pizza on bagel.
Yeah, I haven't tried it.
Oh, shit. This is 15 years ago, Lee. Don't
quote me. It's still there.
I know it's still there, but this is when Venice Boulevard was dead.
Yeah.
I shot a Taco Bell commercial in the summer of 98, and they go, if you don't want to eat this shit, walk down and get a piece of pizza, and I almost died. It was and so every time I got a call, in those days, there was two offices in Abbot Kenny. They used to always call me in. So that's what you do. What time's your audition? 11:30. Perfect. I got lunch down in Abbot Kenny. I got two slices of pizza and a Coke and shit.
Yeah, the funniest, the two auditions I knew where it was just, I was laughing about how wrong it was. One of them, this had to be 98, 99. I'm at NBC. They want moving men. Big guy. That's all it says, right? Big guy.
What year was this?
It's 98, 99, something like that. Back then.
With Steve McGrew?
I don't know, but I'm in the waiting room. Michael Clark Duncan walks in. Michael Clark Duncan, 6'9", 320. Like he had like 20-inch biceps. Like you know what I'm talking about. Green Mile. So I was like,
this is before Green Mile?
This is before Green Mile. This is before he's done anything. Nobody knows who he is. But I'm sitting in the waiting room, and we're looking around, and I went up to the receptionist. Why are we here? Like, you said big guy. What? Did you see what the fuck walked out? I said, I could play the big guy's bitch. And she was just cracking up. I said, did you see the size of that guy who just walked in? And he was laughing. You know, he was laughing. It was like, why are we even here when he just walked in? And then there was another one that I went up for, and it was like it was a cop or it was something, one of those roles, you know, I get called in for that. And the brother came in who had been the chief of police on NYPD Blue. Remember the black guy?
Yeah.
Played that role?
Yeah.
And I'm like,
why are we here?
I tell dick jokes. Like that, that's a fucking actor, right? Like, you know what I mean? When you sit there, when you're looking like, that's an actor. That guy's for real. That guy did it. Like, what, you know? But you go in and you take a shot, right? You never know.
Did you take acting lessons?
Yeah, I took some acting lessons.
For how long?
Actually, for about a year and a half, I had a great acting teacher. Her name's Janet Alhante. And Janet's thing was she would take people from one thing and train them to do something else. Like, she trained Meatloaf for, what was that fucking movie? The Fight Club.
Fight Club.
And she worked with, like, models when they wanted a model to become an actress or whatever. So she was good. She knew how to work with comedians. But the cool thing about her, you know how you get some of these acting coaches that are like, all right, you're a comedian. I don't want you to do comedy. I want you to do
drama
or whatever. Because you. And she was like, no. She said, look, you can do some comedy because it's what you do. But she had me doing Othello, which that was the thing that blew my mind because, like, I had never thought of doing Shakespeare. And she pushed me to that level. But then what happened was, stand-up started to get real hot. This was in the days of Dublin's, right? Then I went into Last Comic Standing, and she said, look, that's what you're doing. She said, you are so deep into that. You know how they talk. She's like, your muscle is all working comedy now. So if you want to do this, come back to this. But for now, just do that. Because the other problem was, in acting class, you got to work scenes with people, right? Well, if you're doing stand-up and you're traveling every week, you can't rehearse with people. You can't do so. Now I'm doing monologues and shit, and I'm kind of like, why am I paying you to do monologues when I do a monologue every night? She was great though. She was cool. But I got one of the things you learn as an actor is, we were talking about this before, you learn respect for great actors. Like people who watch a movie, watch a TV show, but don't see it made, don't understand what a great actor is. But when you get, like we were talking about Fishburne or Don Cheadle, or now you got Idris Elba and you got Denzel, these brothers can do, like when they do a scene, when they bring that emotion, people don't see, they brought that emotion 9 times. You know what I mean? With take one, take two.
Not to interrupt you. Idris Elba is the dude that Denzel shoots an American gangster down the block?
No, Idris Elba is the brother who was, he started with The Wire. He was Stringer Bell on The Wire.
All right.
And what was he in? I don't even know what he was in most recently.
He's been in a bunch of stuff recently.
He works a ton. He was in that Pacific Rim movie with the robots. He does all kind of stuff. He did a great series in the UK called Luther. It was a British series, because he's a British actor.
No shit.
Who plays a black American. Like, he can switch between, Brit and America. But
so who was the dude he shot in that scene that came in?
I can't remember. I know who you're talking about, but I can't remember
because
who that guy
was.
Because
he's one of those dudes that if you grew up in that area, you're like, I saw that.
When was it, an American Gangster?
In America, when he comes into the diner the first time and breaks his balls, and then he goes, from now on, you got to pay this. And he goes, listen, that's more than I was paying, whatever. And then finally he goes up to him with a jar and puts on the street. And he goes, if I don't have my money, I'm going to blow your fucking brains out. And he goes, right here in front of everybody, on 150, bam, and he fucking shoots him.
That was when Denzel, because Denzel would have breakfast in that diner
that
every
little
morning.
Diner that morning.
And he, like, took his napkin off, folded it.
Tremendous,
up,
tremendous.
Just walked outside to the next block, blasted him, and nobody said shit.
In 1970, if you know that neighbor.
Yeah.
Those people, by the time the cops came, that body would be stiff. Bleeding, nobody saw fucking nothing beautiful. But what that dude, when I heard him talk the first, because when I saw him, I go, oh, that dude's beautiful. He's 140.
I can't remember
Street.
His name, but yeah, he's
and
works.
Then he did a movie with a white chick. He was fucking the white chick and the wife and him. I think, Beyonce. Beyonce played the fucking wife.
That's Idris. That's Idris Elba. But that's Idris. I don't think Idris Elba was in American Gangster.
Yeah.
Was it him?
Yeah.
Maybe it was.
Fuck yeah. He keeps going up to him and fucking with him a little bit. First at the party. That's when the shit started. When he put the drink on the table and Denzel came over, wiped it, and put the drink
on
the fucking coaster. That's when it started. Mm. And then he said something to him. Why don't you go over in there and get me a drink or something?
See if
he
tried.
He had been fucking with Denzel for a while.
He was Tango.
Tango. Yeah, was Tango. Tango. Tango, you know that's unreasonable. Yeah. Tango, yes, he's tremendous.
Yeah,
the fuck will fuck me up is that dude, when I heard him talk off camera, he's British. And it fucked me up. Mm-hmm. With all the black dudes we got out of work here, they got to go over to what a fucking island to get a mother black motherfucker. That shit kills me. Because that's all you need. You could be from New York and just come up with a chip, chip, chally ho and tell them you're black. And from England, they'll suck your dick. They'll jump up and down. Regular black kinfolk get no love. But you show up with chip, chip, chally ho, and you used to hang out with Seal, and next thing you know, everybody's sucking your dick. They got fucking cuts. Who the fuck knows? What's up, Alonzo?
Man.
It's good to have you in here. It's good to have
chip,
some
chip,
fucking
chally ho. I think that's the only thing I'm taking from this podcast.
Yeah, chip, chip, chally ho. The fuck? So you're a Queens boy, born and raised.
I'm a Queens boy, St. Albans, Queens.
Jesus Christ.
Yes. St. Albans, Queens. Absolutely.
Grew up a Met fan. We were talking about the Mets the other night.
Literally, let me tell you how literally I grew up with the Mets. Me and the Mets were both born in Queens in 1962. That's how tied I am to the Mets. When I was a kid, we used to go to Met games all the time.
How much will we get? Tell these people. Tell America. The fucking Dodgers want to raise their ticket prices again. I saw that this morning. I'm like, families can't go to a game. How many people in your family?
There were five of us.
And everybody went
back
to the game.
Yeah, back then it was, what, $5 or $8 or something
like
that.
And you brought your
glove. You go to the game.
You had a fantasy you're going to catch a ball.
You're never going to catch a ball.
Fuck
you
no.
You ain't sitting in box seats.
Fuck no.
You remember back in the day when you walked in a stadium, you always looked for the stairs going up. You know, me and my boy, we joke about that now because I go to a lot of Clipper games, and it's like, man, remember back in the day when we used to just walk in and you didn't even look down. You knew you were going up 7 flights of stairs.
I couldn't do that shit today. I could not
now,
do that shit
now
today.
You go down toward the floor. You're like, yeah, this is, we living good. But yeah, man, I used to do that. You know, St. Albans, this is a funny thing about St. Albans. It's funny you was playing Fitty at the beginning. I tell everybody, like, St. Albans wasn't the hood till 50 Cent said it was the hood. Like, we were just a working class black neighborhood. Like, my boys who are from the South Bronx, from up in Harlem, from Brooklyn, shit, like, they were like, man, you lived in the suburbs. You had a fucking lawn. You had a garage in the back of the house. Like, yeah, I know.
Is that where 50's from?
I know.
Queens?
I don't know where he's from, but
that's where he got shot.
He got shot there. Yeah, he got shot there, but, yeah, so mine and the other, there's a nicer part of St. Albans, not the part I lived in, but there's another part where back when shit was segregated, it was where rich black people lived. So James Brown had a house there, Willie Mays had a house there, Miles Davis, I think his wife had a house there, you know what I mean? It was like, it was literally where black celebrities lived because they weren't allowed to live in the white areas. So there was a. I didn't live in that part of St. Albans, but there was a part where these houses were like fucking mansions, you know. But yeah, that's where I grew up, and then came here when I was 18. Came here 2 weeks after high school.
Oh shit!
Yeah, 2 weeks after high school.
I want to go back to something with you. 69 Mets. You were there.
I wasn't at the game, but I absolutely remember.
At 69.
Yeah, Ed Cranepool, Ron Sobota, Tommy Agee, Cleon Jones. Seaver, and the worst trade ever in the history of baseball. Well, no, second worst trade after Babe Ruth. Say, this Nolan Ryan kid's kind of wild. We get rid of his ass. Remember? Nolan Ryan was a Met.
Nolan Ryan was a Met.
Who did they get for him?
Exactly. I don't know. But Nolan Ryan had a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, but you never knew where it was going to go. You know, but then he left and he went to the Angels, and 5 no hitters later, they were like, man, we probably should have kept that Ryan kid.
I go back with the Mets, like the Mets, and my mom was Cuban, so the baseball vibe was alive in the house at the bar she had. It was the argument of the day. You know, it was the argument of the day. Ah, fuck you. So, you know, I go back, Ed Cranepool, Tug McGraw.
Yeah.
The fucking Met she hated the most was a guy by the name of George Theodore, the Stork.
Yeah.
He played the outfield, and his career ended because he banged heads. He either fucking banged his head against the wall or against... I remember I had the chicken pox that week. He was tall and lanky. The Mets were... I don't know.
The best Met game I ever went to, and I'll always remember, I was at the game. It was a Mother's Day. When Willie Mays came back. When Willie Mays came back from the Giants and he played for the Mets and he hit a home run and the stadium didn't cheer, they cried. It was like Willie's home. You know, that was I'll never forget that. I'll never forget when he hit that home run, everybody just fucking lost it.
I remember Willie Mays coming back to the Mets.
The most fun Met that I love, me and my brother still talk about him, Dave Kingman. Remember Dave Kingman, big white guy?
Fuck yeah, he's a strikeout. And then he got traded to Chicago.
He'd strike out 45 times, and in the 46th time, he'd hit a home run 600 feet.
Oh my God.
When Kingman hit shit kept going. It couldn't catch a fly ball. Never forget, there was an announcer one time, Kingman was in the outfield, and they were playing the clip. They said, today, Dave Kingman was attacked by a fly ball. They show him looking at me. But man, when Kong Kingman hit the ball, I mean, that shit was like, it was tape measure. It was, he could hit a baseball 500 to 600 feet, and it was just, and you loved it. But the Mets, that was always the Mets, right? The Yankees were always solid. The Mets always had characters.
So why did you guys choose the Mets over the Yankees?
Because it was where you grew up in New York. Because what's the I grew up in Queens, and the Mets were in Queens.
My mom was in Manhattan, but then we grew up in Jersey, but my mom was always a Met fan.
Yeah.
The house was supposed to be a Met Red Sox house. My house was by law, because that's how most houses are, the Cuban houses. You're supposed to like. I wasn't a Met fan. I was, because my mom was too much of a Met fan, I didn't want to jump on board. But I liked, like, Tug McGraw was my favorite Met. Mm-hmm. Tug McGraw used to fucking hit his glove and shit. Did you ever have anybody see the Rocket Pitch live?
Yeah.
When you see the Rocket Pitch live, the big white dude that got traded to Boston, you really get to see, you don't see that on the camera. He pitched something completely different than what you saw on your home TV. The Rocket, what's his name?
Roger Clemens.
Roger Clemens used to fuck with batters.
Clemens was old school.
Old school.
Tough. And Clemens, he's the one who punked the Mets. He punked Mike Piazza in the 2000 World Series. And that changed the whole thing. When he threw the ball at Piazza, and Piazza didn't rush the mound, when Clemens stood up there like, fuck you gonna do? And Piazza dropped his bat and went to first base. And Piazza was the leader of the Mets. He was the best hitter on the team. Then the whole shit went. And then it was literally like Roger was like, I got you. Like that was, he you supposed to rush the mound. Roger Clemens was that old school, like where they, back then, they didn't fuck around. They'd throw that shit right at your head and stand there and look at what the fuck you going to do. And if you didn't rush him or throw a
you lost the war. You lost the war.
It was all psychological.
Well, I saw him pitch when he was in Boston. I saw him here one time, a couple against the Dodgers. I don't know who he was with. We played against the Dodgers. And he was, I didn't see it that time. When he went to Houston, my friend had tickets behind the fucking mound, the catcher's plate. And Lee, the shit he would do, he would walk towards you and then walk back and not fucking break contact with you shit.
I grew up hating him.
When I grew up,
he had already left the Red Sox. He was out there. When I started like paying attention to baseball, he was with the Yankees.
And he was killing you.
Oh,
yeah. But I'm going to tell you.
I used to hate him.
He was so good. I'll tell you who was better and who would have been. There's two players that would have been first ballot Hall of Fame. Dwight Gooden and Daryl Strawberry.
Yeah.
And Dwight Gooden, he only had two pitches. He was like, look, I'm going to throw you either fastball or a curve. And you are not going to be able to hit him. What was his rookie season? He was like 20-3 or something.
How old was he?
He was 19.
Ladies and gentlemen.
And he was
19.
Dwight Gooden was the most, but you know, cocaine fucked him up. But he was better than Clemens when they both pitched, when he wasn't fucked up.
All right.
He was better.
So his rookie year, 1984.
Wow.
He was 17-9 with a 2.6 ERA. 7 complete games, 3 shutouts. He had
wouldn't allow that now. Now they'd be like, "Oh, you 100 pitches, you got to sit down." 7 complete games,
218 innings, 276 strikeouts.
Baseball's changed.
Yeah,
you know, it's like changed. Everything else has changed. The NBA strategy, changed.
The strategy of the game has changed. But Dwight Gooden.
But for a 19-year-old rookie. Listen.
Oh, Dwight Gooden was, he was amazing. Dwight Gooden was like.
What did we just witness last week? What did we just witness with the 6 games we witnessed? How many games did they play? 5, 6?
I got to say, it was 5. My brother called it. My brother said, man, the Mets can't catch the ball. He said, it's going to fucking catch up. He said, sooner or later, it's going to catch up to them. And when they start, when first you had the bad omen was Cespedes on the first hit into the outfield when Cespedes misplayed it and it was an inside the park home run. That was kind of like God saying, yeah, this ain't going to go well.
Now let me ask you something.
But then you had Daniel Murphy, ball goes through his legs because he doesn't get, but it was fundamental shit. The ball went through his legs because he didn't get the glove on the ground. Like when you're a little league kid, what do they teach you? Get in front of the ball, put your glove on, you know.
Put your knee down.
You have blocked the ball. Then you had Cespedes kicking shit in the outfield.
And they loved Cespedes throughout the season.
Yeah.
Cespedes was great.
Cespedes was great, but Cespedes' thing, he doesn't dive for the ball. He reaches for the ball. So if you reach for it and you miss, this shit's going to then a single turns into a double or a triple, you know, and that's what killed the Mets. And KC, the respect I give KC is every time the Mets made a mistake, KC scored. KC never let
who KC reminds you?
I don't know who.
Cincinnati Reds.
Think so?
75. Listen, some things get forgotten. When I was growing up, you go to Kung Fu, the first thing they teach is a sweep. You set the guy up with two sidekicks. Now the guy's looking for sidekicks, and all of a sudden you do a spinning thing. He goes for the sidekick, and you take his front leg out, and he's on his fucking head. Everybody was doing that. That's what you practice, just spinning around the fucking floor and sweeping motherfuckers. They don't do that no more. Well, guess what else people don't do in baseball no more? The most important thing in baseball is, for me, with my mind, the first thing I do if I get a baseball team is the first guy has to fucking hit singles, and he has to learn, and he has to steal a.k.a. base. Joe Morgan.
Yeah.
This is the blueprint.
Ricky Anderson.
This is the fucking blueprint. Yeah. I need somebody who's going to torment pitches. Listen, I remember, and I tell Lee all the time, there's a classic Cincinnati Red game on classic ESPN where you could see when they took the pitcher out against the Reds, like after the lineup had been up against them not two times, like the Reds would take you two times. You'd see the same batter two times. That's unheard of in an inning. And it was all done with bunts and steals and stupidity. Nobody was hitting home runs for the Reds. Eric Foster, whatever. George Foster. Nobody was a home run hitter. Pete Rose was no home run hitter.
No, Johnny Bench could hit it.
Johnny Bench could hit a home run. That's it. Plummer was no home run. Tony Perez was. Yeah. Geronimo wasn't. They just hit and steal. And they stole, and they tormented you till the pitcher finally goes, you know what? Take me out. I'm done. I don't need this in my life. This ain't baseball. This is torment.
But even that though, the Mets, like, okay, so you got a guy steal second. Forget it. There's two outs. Just get the batter out. You know what I mean? Fuck the guy.
They fell apart.
Yeah, they did. But they fell apart on fundamental shit. Not turning a double play. And that's what killed him. And the Mets depend on hitting the home runs, and the home run hitters disappeared. Cespedes wasn't hitting it out. Murphy stopped hitting it out.
Well, did the Royals make the playoffs last year?
Yeah, the Royals lost the World Series to San Francisco.
So,
last year.
Do you think it was like just they weren't ready to be there?
Oh, they said that. Well, one thing is they always say that you learn. They say the first time you go, like you think you know, but when you get on that stage, when it's that big and everyone's looking at you, some people can handle it. Some people can't.
It's tough. The some press, people can't. There's a lot. There's a lot that goes into
fucking Jim Kelly, Buffalo Bills, right? Jim Kelly went to the Super Bowl every year, never figured it out. Joe Montana went to the Super Bowl every year, never lost.
Fucking Elway went four times, lost, and then came back and won three or four or whatever.
Elway learned. You know, it's. I mean, it's big. It's big. Everyone's looking at you. The whole world's looking at you. And when you play for New York, not only is the whole world looking at you, like the New York press, like we will turn on you. You know what I mean?
It's like, and make pictures of you and shit.
What was that song? What have you done for me lately?
Yeah.
Fuck last week's home run. What?
You hit a home run last week. It's a horrible thing.
Remember, Randy Johnson went to the Yankees and couldn't pitch? The 6'10" guy from Seattle. Yeah. He went to the Yankees. He had never been under that kind of pressure. And then he went to Arizona and he started pitching again. He said he could not handle the pressure of New York press, you know, every day.
I watched something interesting last night when I got home. I stayed up and watched this. I know you know about it because you're a sports fanatic. You might have been too young for this. I did all my time in Boulder when I got arrested and shit. So I was going through. I lived in Boulder ever since 85. You got to clock me in Boulder for being. But full time, it was 87. And what do you do when you're in a town? You pay attention to football. I paid attention to the Broncos at that time. And I paid attention to the Colorado Buffaloes. And last night I walk in the house from the Comedy Store. And I'm going through. You know, I'm like, I could go to bed. But I like to, like, unwind a little bit. And 30 for 30.
Oh, yeah.
Bill McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
And I started watching. I still remember Sal Inesi. He got stomach cancer. And he passed the ball. Lee, this is a fucking great story. I mean, then they lost the national championship to Notre Dame. And what they do? They came back the next year. But they were 3-1-1. And what happened? The fifth down game. You remember that?
Yeah.
Lee don't remember that shit. Lee, five downs, and they got away with it. And then they attacked the guy because he was a Christian. And he's like, I ain't overtaking the game. Mm-hmm. I spiked it on the fourth down. Who spikes the ball on the fucking fourth down? Lee, it's fucking amazing. I have forgotten all about that.
And they got away with it?
Yeah.
They got away. And that.
This was before replays or anything like that. So all you had to do was snap the ball. And they got five downs.
Lee, tremendous. I'm sitting there going, you know what? I was going to go to bed at 11:30. Fuck, I'm going to watch it all the way through. But they told the two stories at once, which I didn't finish. I talked to my buddy today in Boulder, and we were talking about, like, that team was amazing. And they came back the next year, and they beat Notre Dame on Ishmael.
Yeah,
that was the play. Ishmael. Rocket fucking won it. Notre Dame had the fucking game, but they called it back. Mm-hmm. They called it back. Lee, fucking final play of the game. A clipping. Who gets called back on a fucking punt return clipping in the last play of the game? And Colorado Buffalo.
Remember Rocket? Has anyone been that fast since Rocket Ishmael?
Happened to him?
Nothing. He's around. You know where I saw him? On one of those Bo Jackson football commercials. You know, watch the game with Bo. He's on one of those.
What team did he go to after that?
Rocket. I think he finished his career with Dallas. I think his pro career ended with Dallas. I think he was a Raider and then a Cowboy.
I was doing my thing.
But he was.
Alonzo. I blacked out of sports.
But he was so fast. Like, he would just he was a little guy, right? He was like, what, 6 feet, maybe 160, something like that, if he was 6 feet. But he would literally run past people. Like, it was amazing. Like, he would just run past people. Like, they were right there, and it was like, he's gone.
And that's what Chad Brown was saying. Chad Brown said, I had him. Yeah. Simple tackle, one, you know, tackle 101. I had him. But he broke out of the tackle.
Yeah.
And Chad Brown said, I felt terrible. And I looked up, and also McCarty goes, but I did what any good coach did. I looked around the field, and there it was, a flag. And that's what saved us, a clipping on Notre Dame and the Colorado Buffaloes won. But the daughter, this is crazy. I remember I moved to Boulder. And the girl I was dating, her family used to go to Sacred Heart Church. So I started going to Sacred Heart Church. And one day he goes, that's the coach. And he's coming with his whole family and a couple kids. Then the fucking shit started with the daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She had the kid with the football player that died. But then she decided to have another kid with a football player. Then to top it off, another kid with a football player. This was crazy.
The same football player or multiple?
No, the first one died. So he was Hawaiian. He was from Oceanside. Mm-hmm. Salanesi was whatever those people with the togas and the whole fucking thing.
Samoan?
Samoan.
Togas.
And then the second kid was a black kid, mm-hmm. I presume. Then she had a white kid. Then she had another kid with another football player. Finally, they had to put her in the... My daughter's fucking too many football player with this relocation program and shit. But then he started Promise Keepers and the whole fucking thing. And, you know, you Christian, Lee?
No.
Okay, just asking. I didn't know if you were a Promise Keeper. You know what I'm saying?
Sometimes.
So when the fuck did you start comedy, Alonzo?
I started.
18. What the fuck made you go, I'm going to California from Queens?
I went to Aviation High School in Long Island City. Got my licenses to fix airplanes. And Lockheed, which used to be right over here in Burbank, hired me. They hired me. They said, you get to L.A., you got a job waiting. You know, so you know all I had to do was tell that to my dad. 18th birthday, got a trunk to pack my shit and a one-way plane ticket. Happy birthday. You're a man. came out here.
When did you decide to go to that high school?
What happened, my boy's dad worked for TWA, and he had a new Cadillac every year. And I didn't like school. I was good at school, but I didn't like it. And he said, listen, I fix airplanes and I make a lot of money. It's a good job. And he said, all you got to do is go to this school, get your licenses, and you can do this. And I was like, okay. And now when I look back, you know how crazy that shit is to be 14 and make a decision of what you're going to do? You know what I mean? Like a career decision. But, you know, back in New York, they had high schools for anything. There was aviation. There was automotive. There was Queens Vocational, where you could learn shit like plumbing and electrical and stuff. There was, the famous one was Performing Arts.
Really?
They were Performing Arts.
That's
you
so
know,
cool.
For, they had a Bergstrom, which was like a business school. Like they had, you could go to high school almost and specialize in what you wanted to do. And you had to take tests, like you had to get in. It wasn't like you could just walk in. That's why all of that's gone now, because they did away with the testing.
Oh. Okay.
So, but anyway, I got hired by Lockheed. I moved out here. I started building airplanes. Shit was good. And then after about 10 years, I was training new guys and making them laugh. And I said, I want to start comedy. And that's how it came about, from training.
Wait, now, when did the truck come in? The fucking truck with you driving.
That was after I got, okay, so I'm working for McDonnell Douglas, and I do comedy my first time, and then I get laid off by McDonnell Douglas, right? So now I don't have a job, but I don't want to fix airplanes again, and like you're doing anything, you know, you're fucking hustling. Listen, I fucking painted addresses on the curb.
Now, what year was
this? This was 93.
Wow, okay.
And then when my boy called me about Power Rangers, I went and did it. And this is when the show first started, okay? This was when it was a pilot and the first 6 episodes. I worked as a camera truck driver. And for whatever reason, the producer, there was this guy named Jonathan Sekor, really cool guy. He liked me. So the show goes, so they do the 6 episodes, then it goes away. Then it comes back, and he calls me up, and he's like, you know, I love you, you work hard, but I want you to be transportation captain. And I'm like, all right, let me call you back. And I call my boy, Wayne. I said, Wayne, what the fuck's a transportation captain? And he said, take the job. You'll figure it out. He said, all you got to do is you're in charge of parking the trucks and all that shit. I was like, all right. So I took the job, and I went back to Power Rangers. And then they knew I was doing comedy. And the producer said, look, you always got a job here. So if you go on the road for a week or two, we'll hire day players. We'll get someone to drive the truck. But when you come back, it's your job. And that's how I paid my rent for 4 years, until I went to New Faces in Montreal. And, you know, that's when I got my break and went full time.
So you were doing comedy up here the whole time?
I started in L.A. I started in L.A. because I didn't know I wasn't supposed to, you know, because they always say you can't start in L.A., you got to start somewhere and come to
L.A.
I
always thought you were a New York comic.
I'm a New York guy. I grew up in New York, but I started in L.A.
Where were you going those days?
There were bookstores and shit like that, coffee shops, but club-wise, there wasn't many clubs. I used to get up at Igby's, which I don't know if you were here when Igby's was in business. I used to get up at Igby's.
Was Igby's?
Igby's was on the west side. It was on Pico.
Good club?
And, yeah.
Igby's was forever, a
great club,
right?
Yeah. And then there was the L.A. Cabaret.
Up here.
In Encino. And I used to get up there. Yeah, Ray used to run that.
And where is Ray today? Anybody see him ever?
No. Ray had a ton of money, though. Ray inherited hospitals. Like, that's why the club was so shitty, they said, because Ray didn't need the money, because he inherited, like, 2 hospitals from his parents or some shit. So, but anyway, yeah, I used to get up there. And then I used to get up. There used to be, there was a bowling alley in, like, Woodland Hills or some shit.
Canoga.
I remember that. Was it Canoga? Canoga, yeah.
Right, they still were doing comedy years ago.
Used to do that. And then there was a woman named Victoria Dushoff. And this woman loved me. And Victoria,
a manager.
Yeah. Victoria used to have comedy shows in places you never should have. Like, she would get hotel room, lobby room. I remember we used to do comedy. I used to do this with Shang. Me and Shang were laughing about this. We used to work at the Hyatt next to the Comedy Store. You know, we do comedy in the ballroom at the hotel next to the Comedy Store. Like, how close and far away from a dream is that?
Victoria Dushoff, she died.
She was great, though. She used to have a Wednesday night at the Holiday Inn out by LAX. And you'd do the show in the bar, and half the room would be Germans, because there was like a tour company that brought Germans every year. So half of the bar didn't understand a word you were saying, but you couldn't make fun of them because they were, you know, big business for the hotel. But yeah, Victoria was great. And then that was back when I hooked up with Rudy Moreno. Rudy started me in the East L.A., rooms and all that. Yeah, the Brave Bull and what was it? Tortillas. You ever do tortillas?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So Rudy had all that shit going. But yeah, that was the grind back then. That's what you did.
Oh my God. All these years, I thought you were in New York, bouncing through Brooklyn and shit.
I'm surprised you guys didn't cross paths. It sounds like the same
room. We did. I worked a lot of Rudy. You know, when I came to town, I did a couple spots at the Improv right off the bat. The Comedy Store passed me. But everybody, when I got here, everybody said, you got to call Rudy.
Yeah.
And I called Rudy. Rudy wouldn't return my fucking calls. So I got in my car one night, and I drove down to this fucking place on a Friday night. I go, who's Rudy?
Yeah, I remember the Brave Bull.
Yeah. The Brave Bull, and I went out, and I go, you're Rudy, I'm Joey Diaz. Hey, I was going to call. No, you weren't going to fucking call me. I go, since you're not going to give me a gig, let me do a guest spot. And he booked me. He used to pay $35 or something on Friday nights. You went there Fridays and Saturdays for $35. You know, what the
fuck? But I tell people, like, you're not a comic if you haven't done a Rudy Moreno gig.
Yeah, no.
Everyone's done Rudy. Like fucking George Lopez has done Rudy Moreno gigs. You know what I mean? Like, Paul Rodriguez. Everybody has done some. Rudy used to just fucking run East LA.
He used to have the Irish bar in front of a strip club.
Yeah.
That little Irish pub there for a while. Monday nights or something. That was great.
Yeah.
Rudy had the casino.
Yeah.
With the best Chinese food in Los Angeles.
Commerce Casino. Yeah, Rudy, you know. And those days were fun. That was when Fluffy started. Like, I remember working with Gabe when
at
Gabe
the other,
was making
the Bicycle Club.
The Bicycle Club on Thursday night.
$35.
Yeah, $50.
You had to come the next day and pick it up by
me
check.
Me and him were talking about that. You know, I saw him a couple of years ago, and we were talking about that. Because we knew even then, we were like, man, this fat kid is fucking amazing. You know, because everyone loved him, right? He had that fucking, that magic that everyone loved him. Those were the days.
Remember,
man.
Rudy used to send us to Tucson once every 90 days to Bugsy's.
And he had the.
Oh, my God.
You would do the Tempe Improv on like Tuesday night.
Tuesday night.
And we stayed in that shitty hotel next to the outlet mall.
Oh, my God. Remember Lee, this is 15 years ago. Yeah, this is 15 years ago.
But I tell everyone, that's how you get good. That's how you get good. You have to do that shit, right? You can't get good doing 6 minutes at the hippest room in Hollywood. You can get on TV, you could do this or that, but if you want to become a comic, you got to do those fucking rooms that it's just shit and it's grinding and it's, you know what I mean? Like, you got to earn it.
What baffles me about this whole comedy thing is, like, a guy with my background, nothing in the entertainment, I did like an improv class in high school. And I knew that when I got into comedy, I just knew I bullshitted the first 3 years. I fucked around the first 3 years. But I went to New York City, and I was bouncing around New York Comedy Club, and it was bullshit. It was bullshit. You know, you're just trying to get up, talking shit, trying to meet people. You, in the back of your mind, you're like, you know what? These suckers are suckers. One night, somebody's going to come and see me. I'm going to be on CBS. These guys can suck my dick. You don't need to work this hard. And one night I went to your old Triple N, some fucking hole in the wall, and I see John Leguizamo in there. And it blew my mind. Like, I went home, and I'm like, I get it now. And it was 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
I used to drive a limo. It was 2 in the morning. I just stopped in there to sign my name on the list to see if I could do 7 minutes or something in those days. For people drinking alcohol, it was at the last stop till 4. It was an open mic from midnight to 4 a.m. or some shit. Are you fucking crazy? Yeah. You know? And that changed me. I went back to Denver. I went right back to square one. And a lot of people, Bill Burr just went off a couple weeks ago. Did you hear that thing on alternative comics? No. And somebody sent it to me, and I never listened to links. And for some reason, I wanted to hear what the fuck he had to say. And he goes, it's so weird. The real comics are the ones that go into these rooms and clean up their mess.
Yeah.
He goes, you ever go to a...
That's an old clip. He said that years ago.
No, he said this recently on the podcast.
Okay, because I remember saying
he was talking about how he goes into these rooms and the same alternative comics like, hey, can I go up before you? I have a spot at some coffee shop. And he's like, fuck you. Do your fucking spot. You know? Yeah. What the fuck is wrong with you? You don't want to follow nobody?
Mm-hmm.
I paid my dues. Like, that's what I'm even talking about when I go into that audition room for acting. Hey, listen, I know acting is a big commitment, but again, I don't see fucking Don Cheadle doing the halftime of a Sabre game.
Oh, and man.
You understand me? That changed my fucking life. That gave me legs.
The Laugh Factory, that used to happen. Jamie, I did the open mic, and Jamie hired me as a doorman, right? And he said, look, when people don't show up or whatever, you do drop-in spots. You know, you can get up 5 minutes, this or that. And they throw you on. It's like Damon Wayans just finished. All right, go up. Like, I learned, because you had to go up after the best. But that's what made you good. That's what fucking made you good. You had to go up. You never knew who you would be following. I remember one night, it was a fucking Sunday night. This is before, I think it was before Chocolate Sundays. But it just happened to be on a Sunday night. and Chris Rock and Chris Tucker had both gone up on the same show, and they put me up at the end. And I was correct, because they, and the funny thing was, they were both complaining about their families asking them for money, and I said, man, if I'm ever making $10 million a year and complain about making money, somebody come kick my ass. And the fucking crowd lost it. The crowd cried, because we were all like, the fuck? You know, this was when they were both just starting to, well, Chris Rock was already there, but it was when Tucker, I think Chris Tucker had just done Rush Hour or some shit like that. But, yeah, that's how you get good. You know, when we did Last Comic Standing, we had this talk one time, and because you had some comics who had come up through the ranks, like me and Heffron and Kathleen Madigan and Corey Holcomb, you know, who did all this shit. And then you had other comics who, like Gary Goldman, had worked with Dane Cook a lot. So he was getting it. He was opening for Dane. So he was working A rooms because, you know, because of Dane. And Bonnie had come in through the alternative, and they were talking about how the audience should be supportive and help you grow and stuff. And it was like, yeah, that all sounds good. But when you're doing a fucking biker bar in Montana on Wednesday night,
a triple run,
then then your ass better be funny like that. There's no support. You know what I'm saying? What's that website called? Funny or Die? Those shits with like, this is literally funny or die. Yeah, this is literally funny or die. Nightmare,
bro. Those things, and then they start heckling you. You got nowhere to go,
man. I remember doing a fucking roadhouse in Beaumont, Texas. And ripping on this big redneck, and then when he left, they were like, "It's about time someone went off." Just because he runs the Klan around here, I'm like, "What the fuck? What?" And that's when after the show, you can't stay in town.
Beaumont, Texas always had a comedy scene, and Beaumont, Texas is on the border. I copped coke one night in a fucking terrible neighborhood in Beaumont.
Beaumont is a rough fucking town.
Oh my God. You go to Janis Joplin Museum. There's like a pair of underwear and a fucking pillow she slept on. Who needs to see this shit? But Beaumont used to have a club that was owned by a black couple. They were engineers, and they took their money and they opened up a black club. And they did it for a few years, then they got rid of it and they opened up Slade Ham. Slade opened it with his buddy. And that club was, Lee, it was fucking crazy. It was crazy.
Well, what happened?
Every time I went down, it was crazy. See, Alonzo's a nice person. You know, he don't drink, he don't dabble. Every time I went to Beaumont, that's where I OD'd on the Valium.
I retired.
That's where
you think I don't do it. I retired.
I fucking ate 30 Valiums in 3 days and drank shots of Jägermeister. There was one point I heard I laid down on the stage and shit. Come on, guys. That's not my fucking bag. It was terrible. But it's just, I remember one night, they're like, if you want to get blow, you have to go into this weird neighborhood. And they're like, it's KKK, so you have to sit in the car and we'll go in there and get the coke from the KKK and shit like that. Alonzo, you know what I'm thinking about just now? You were there the night that they called the cops on me. When they caught me eating that chick's pussy at the fucking...
In the freezer.
In the freezer.
The man has no respect.
That she had no respect.
Joey D had no respect.
We were talking to those girls in the alleyway. The place was packed.
That's one of the legendary stories of Dublin's back then. Because Dublin's was the spot back then. Dublin's was the fucking...
The reason why you and I were in the hallway was because there was literally, and I'm not talking about this, nowhere to stand. In those days, you had to see this place on a Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Across the street was karaoke,
right?
Which was
Miyagi,
or you could eat sushi.
Yeah.
You're fucking crazy, Lee. This is crazy. The place that's now dead. You and I always stop there, and the lady roller skates across the street right there.
Yeah.
That place on a Tuesday night, Lee, would be like fucking... It'd just be like the kingdom of LA.
You couldn't get in, Lee. You know,
and it'd be in between Miyagi. I remember one night some girl called me on a Wednesday morning. She goes, "Where'd you go last night? Where'd you go after whatever?" And I go, "I went home. I went to the store." She goes, "We went across the street and fucking Whitney Houston was there with Bobby Brown." And she sang. This is crazy. This is after a comedy show.
But at Dublin's fucking, was it Justin Timberlake used to drop in and all these super stuff? But Joey D, with no respect for our fucking food, is banging a chick in the freezer. Or she was blowing you a
I was eating a pussy with a Coke rock in it and shit. Here's the crazy
thing. In the freezer. Lee.
It's me alone.
I haven't really, Lee. I've only heard bits and pieces of this story.
Hold it, Lee. Here's the thing. Here's the thing about Dublin's. We didn't get paid. You know what we worked for? Free food. That's what we worked for. And Joey had no respect.
No, I didn't. This is what happened. I got on stage. I had to follow Dane. I bombed. I had to go up before Dane. You just bombed. They were there to see Dane. And it was Willie Barsena.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan.
Mm-hmm.
Willie Barsena and Joe Rogan stayed in the room. I went into the hallway with you and the Asian dude with the long hair that ran that club next to the fucking Dublin.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the main club 5 years before that.
Right.
On Sunset. On Tuesday night, it was first
what
open.
What was that guy? Ace.
Ace. There you go. Who the fuck do you think you're dealing with? Joey Bananas here? I'm dropping fucking shit on him last night from 1973. Yeah. How many? It was Ace, you, and four or five girls talking. Ace always had broads with him.
Yeah, always.
Ace was a good-looking dude that had long hair. He was Asian. He was just one of those dudes that didn't have one chick with him. He always had a chick and two of her friends. So they're giggling, haha, Alonzo's talking to the one, and I'm minding my business. I'm an ugly dude. I got no confidence. I'm minding my business. And the girl comes over, blah, 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 and she had like her shirt open. And I'm like, this is not good. And I could see she's doing blow. And I wasn't coked up because Joe Rogan was there. I don't do coke when Joe Rogan's around. Just out of respect for him, so I don't need to hear it. I'll have it in my pocket, dying. Dying, I ain't gonna lie to you, dying. Can't wait for Joe to go home. Wait, aren't you gonna go shoot Poon Joe? I couldn't wait in those days. I couldn't shake that motherfucker in those days. Let's go eat, Joe. Let's go to Jerry's Deli. What the fuck? So, I don't know what. I didn't have no coke. I had no coke at all. I had no money. I had no fucking dough, guys. I had maybe $10 or something. And the girl starts talking to me, and she goes, I got a little bit. Well, let's go do it. What are we going to do? We can't go to the bathroom. We can't go to the car. We can't walk through here. Lee, you couldn't walk through the fucking...
No, you couldn't.
Lee, I'm telling you, there was waitresses. It was something you never saw before. So I go, what's downstairs? And she goes, I can't go downstairs. What do you mean you can't go downstairs? Let's go downstairs. You got a coke rock? Yeah, let's go downstairs. We go downstairs, and we go into the freezer. We look around. We see the freezer. But there's beer in there and shit. And we start talking, and she goes in, and bam, she takes out an eight ball, dog. And she's bumping, and I'm bumping, and she's putting, Mama, you come here often? Yeah, me too. To a fucking freezer. Once you get them in the freezer, you got them. You got something, a tit shot. In those days, there was no cameras. You couldn't take pictures of that pussy and shit like that. So what am I going to do? So I don't know. One thing led to another. I'm like, you ever have a coke rock in your pussy? She's like, no, nobody's ever done it. Lose the pants. She took her pants down.
That did not work. That line worked.
Okay, I'm telling you the fucking story.
You gotta understand how crazy Dublin's was.
Dublin's was crazy.
It was so full of hotties. I mean, it was
crazy women.
Yeah.
Crazy. Before it was Dublin, there was a place two doors down that got so popular with hot women that comics were demanding to perform there on Tuesday nights.
Yeah.
Like fucking calling, and it was Ahmed was
Ahmed and Jay Davis.
This was way before fucking Dublin. This was way, there was a room two doors
it
down.
It was two doors down in the basement. It in was the in the basement, and then they moved it upstairs to Dublin's. They
there
moved
you
it
go.
From the basement of
I
that
was
place.
Before them in the fucking thing next door.
So she took her pants down, what happened?
I put the coke rock on the pussy. I licked it, I fucking fingered it, and tried to smooth it in there. And as I went to lick it again, they opened the door. The Hindu doorman and the black dude and the big white dude. And they said, we got you on camera. And we already called the cops. Yeah. The police are on their way. And they took us both upstairs. She started crying. I've never done this before. But at the time, you know me, dog. I took the eight ball and put it in my sock. I ain't giving that motherfucking bird up, Jack. So we went upstairs. The guy says, stay right here. I'm going to call the police. I call the police. They should be here any minute. But there was jam. Sunset was jammed in those days on a Tuesday night. Even the fucking, even the Laugh Factory was packed. And this, and the Comedy Store was a fucking Joe Torre.
Yeah, it was Joe Torre.
This was, Sunset was mobbed in those days. So, you know, what happened? Some guy, so all this is going down. Willie Barsena comes up with Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan goes, what's going on? They go, this kid got caught doing drugs and sexual things and the fuck. We got it on tape. So Joe's giggling. I go, Joe. He goes, take $100 just in case when you get down and call me. Let me know what's going on. And all of a sudden, Joe goes in, and I look up, and I see Ralphie Mae waddling across the street. He just finished eating the sushi like a motherfucker. And he comes towards me. I go, go get your car. He goes, what are you talking about? I go, go get your car. He goes, I can't. I have a showcase for CBS. I go, Ralphie, go get your fucking car. The cops are going to come and arrest me. Go get the fucking car and turn it around. So when he went, it was right there. He went, started it, and turned it around. And, dog, I just fucking got in the car. We went down the street. Boom, we got the fuck out of there. And the next thing I heard, I was banned and shit.
I remember that, yeah.
Oh, this is crazy, Lee. And then he fucking wrote it on the website. And I started dating my wife. And my wife one day said to me, do you know that fucking, did you get caught at the Dublin eating some chick's pussy? Are you banned from there? Because me and Brian Hoffman are the only people that are banned from there.
You put that on the website?
Jay Davies
did. Jay, there was so much shit. Good. This is when Dane was becoming famous. This is when Dane was moving from, you know, college club comic to like fucking arena rock star. So every Tuesday, the place was packed. But it wasn't just Dane. It was like he said, you'd have drop-ins like fucking Joe Rogan, Jay Moore, Chappelle. I mean, the list goes on. Everybody worked there. Fucking Roseanne dropped in and did spots at Dublin's. Everybody, Dr. Ken, fucking Craig Robinson, Ralphie Mae. Everybody came to Dublin's every Tuesday. I would go up after Dane every night because nobody wanted to follow Dane. And I didn't give a shit because it had started with the open mic. And I would be up there with a notebook. So I would just go up after Dane's like fucking rock star thing. And I would just sit on a stool and start fucking doing crowd work and fucking with people. And we would every week. We had a ball. That was the most creative time I ever had in comedy.
What do you guys think makes like a show like that? Because we're in LA. There must be thousands of comedy shows a week.
It was one of those things where it just came together. It just happened. I don't even know why. It just happened organically. Like it was just the energy and people. You know why it was so great? Because it was where the pros went to work out, and everybody knew it. Because it was like an open mic for pros and guys who, like, you had to have talent to work there. Like I said, if you look at the roster of Dublin's from, what was that, 15 years ago, 12, 15 years ago, and then look at Hollywood today and how many guys are on sitcoms and movies or what, you know what I mean? That we were learning. We were coming up. That was before I did Last Comic. When I did Last Comic after that, I had fucked around and done so much crowd work at Dublin's, they were like, oh, we didn't know you could do like regular stand-up. Like they thought that was my whole act. They thought that's all I did was sit on a chair and fucking talk. And that was when Dr. Ken would come in and do the fucking music act and shit like that, you know. And then next thing you know, he's in The Hangover, and you're like, wait, isn't that the guy from Dublin's? Like that's the way it was. It was crazy.
It was not me, Lee, at all.
Why not?
I went there twice.
There were some guys who didn't like you. You know who hated it? Bobby Kelly. Bobby always hated
it. It wasn't my scene, Lee. They were younger. I was really dirty. It just didn't work. I went in there one time and had a showcase for an agent. And I'm not, and he's a big timer now. The other day I bumped into him. And he came up to me after that, and he goes, I love it. He goes, when you come back after the holidays, I want you to do the paperwork, bring headshots in. He goes, I got an idea for a character. We're going to put a handcuff on you and a suit, and you're going to be the lost blues brother. I got a deal to pitch this to. I never called that dude. I didn't want to be a lost blues brother, dog. And that was the first time I went in there. And then I got called in again one night, and I went down there with Rogan and Willie Barsena. I bombed. I ate the chick's pussy. The cops came. I never went back again. But I knew it wasn't my spot, Lee.
Do you think if you could do it now? Do you think you could do the room now?
Oh, now I could do the room. Now I'm experienced enough how to handle it. I know how to get myself out of that bind.
But here's the thing. Jay has been trying to recreate that room ever since. But you can't recreate it. Lightning don't strike twice. It was just a matter of, it was just one of those things. It's like when Seinfeld and Drew Carey and Leno and all those guys talk about the New York improv. You know, when they talk about the Improv back when they were starting out and how they would be there, it's the same thing. Dublin's was just that place at that time, but you can't redo it.
You know, it's an interesting question you asked that. The first experience I had like that was walking in. I started comedy in June of 91. And in maybe August of 93, I got the balls one night on a Monday night and went down to the Boston Comedy Club.
I remember the Boston.
On Monday nights, Lee, in 1993, this was... It was 400, 300 people. Whatever the fuck it said. People, a line. A fucking line.
But where is it in New York, right?
It was in the Village.
In the Village. I mean, Lee, a line. You know, there was the four comedy clubs. And that, yeah. And the, you know, but that one, it was Jay Moore and Dave Chappelle.
Yeah.
And Nick DiPaolo and Felicia Michaels. You're like, I remember going there on a Monday and going, oh, my God, all these guys have been on Club MTV.
Yeah. Or,
that's the big show then. It was Club MTV or the other one on A&E.
Half hour comedy hour.
So that's how you got to recognize these guys. But you went home and go, wait a second. Why were there 300 people there in a line around the corner? It's Monday night. You can't explain it. You can't explain it. You could take strippers and get cakes and give out free shrimp. And if the room don't have that magic, the room don't have that magic.
Frasier had that when he had Frasier Smith After Midnight. You remember that show?
No.
Frasier used to have a show on Friday nights at the Laugh Factory. And it was on the radio. I think I want to say it was KLSX radio. But everybody would be there. Everybody was there from fucking, you know, from the Lakers to Ron Jeremy. You know what I mean? Like, you never knew who would drop in. Fucking rock stars, porn stars, basketball players. Frasier Smith After Midnight was hot as shit. And then the radio station changed the format. And they cut the show. And then he tried to do it a couple of other times. But it was like, nope. That was it. You know, nobody knows why those shows.
And you could get a publicist. And you could make people, you know, pay people to come to your club and make believe they're having a good time. This is the other way around. These people coming to your club to let people know they're cool.
Yeah.
And hip. That's when it's like stealing. What? And you could see the difference. You could see when I'm paying, you know, Liberace to come to your fucking club, and when I'm paying Liberace because he wants to be there, you could see the difference in people.
Have you got any offers for that?
Oh, yeah. People contact me all the time. Come down, we'll give you 10 grand, sit at the bar. No. Nobody offers me no fucking
money. Really? I would have thought somebody would have.
Fuck no. I want to go hang out with somebody for time. Like that, you mean? Oh, no. Oh, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, just make an appearance, like open a restaurant or something.
No. I'm too embarrassed to do something like that. Let me give some shout-outs. See, it's 3:46. Gilberto Juarez, John DeBrudge, Don Wrangler, Keith Browner, Tommy Easter. I see you, motherfucker, down at the Storm, making it happen. One by One Podcast, Dr. Gonzo, Alex Rainey, and my girl Stephanie Rivera. What are you, fucking nuts or what? What are you kidding me? Oh, fucking what?
Thomas Easter's good on Periscope. He does like a southern version of you, kind of.
Tommy Easter, he's living in a van. He does two sets tonight at Maury's Comedy Club somewhere on Sunset. He takes showers at the Store. He's living the dream, dog. Yeah. That's the dream right there. Where are you going to get that type of respect? Taking showers out there in the open. He looks good. He looks healthy.
Yeah.
And he's fucking trying. I got to give him all the respect in the world. You look at that type of shit. When you're a comic, you go, I can't do that. We did it.
If you started over today, it's like, I don't even know how.
You did it. I don't know where to fucking start. I wouldn't know. Yeah. If you came to me today and said, Joey, I want to do comedy, where the fuck do I start? I don't even know coffee shops I do it anymore.
I don't know. They're out there.
My friend says he goes to a place on Tuesdays. And it's a sandwich shop in Burbank.
They have websites with all the open mics.
Mm.
You just put in your zip code.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's see the open mics in the neighborhood.
Okay.
Let's see what the fuck's going on in this motherfucker here. I remember that having a list on my wall.
Mm-hmm.
And having Monday.
Well, you knew every night. Options. You knew every night where
Tuesday,
to go. Monday,
where to go.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
And there was like the list I would go.
And remember this? This is funny. Remember when you used to dream about working on a weekend?
Oh my God. I tell Lee all the time.
Remember, you used to dream. Now you dream about a weekend off. But you used to dream like, man, one day I'm going to do Friday. One day I'm going to do Friday. You'd be funny as shit on Wednesday.
Oh, my God. I tell these guys, I get home on a fucking Wednesday night and I'd bomb all three sets, you know. And I'd fucking get a bag of blow and I'd open up Just the Laughs, the magazine back then. And in the back, I'd circle all the clubs I was going to get. I was going to work someday. Like, these are going to fuck these people. They didn't like me tonight. They're a bunch of cowboys. I would give myself an excuse and then go, this is someday I'm going to work the fucking Seattle fucking underground. Yeah. Kill that motherfucker with my Godzilla joke and shit. They're going to understand my Godzilla joke.
I find it's crazy. This is new. It's
what's tonight?
For tonight, there's the Haha, the Oyster House in Studio City.
Oh, they do comedy at the Oyster House? I know that's up on Moore Park. I know what that is.
Saba Sushi in L.A. Flappers, the Comedy Store, Hollywood Hotel, the Clown House, the Lexington, the Grandview Market, Rudy's Baja Grill, Beans and Espresso, and the Slip Bar.
They got some action going. If you really want to be a comic, you look at that thing and you go, there's 18 fucking... Well, you know, listen, you're not going to go to the Comedy Store. You could, as a beginner comic, you look at that list realistically, and there's four really good sets for you
tonight. But you knew where they were.
Right.
You knew which open mics were good and then which ones were...
Well, the only way to realize is to go down
there. Yeah, you go. You gotta get down there. I mean, once you get in the loop of doing open mics... You'd always learn. Like, my thing was, I always wanted to talk to somebody who was on the next level. That was always my thing. So if I'm doing free open mics, I wanted to talk to somebody who was doing the $20 rooms and be like, how the fuck you get there? Like, how do you get 20 bucks? You know what I mean? Like, how do you get, oh, man, how do you get 50 bucks? How do you get a Friday? You know, and that was always my thing, chasing the next level.
Well, you go out. It's funny how it works, man. You go out some nights, and I always had a motto when it came to comedy: nothing happens on the couch.
Yeah.
Once you realize from the year 2 to the year 10, you're going to be out every fucking night. Once you get that through your head, it makes your life a lot easier. Thanksgiving, you got two sets. How's that for you? Yeah. Not because of Thanksgiving, because you're going to make yourself two sets, you know? If not, you're just going to fall asleep there. It got to the point where... it was an addiction for me to get up on stage. Like, I, you know, I know what it is to have an addiction to wake up and the first thing you think about. And that's why I tell young comics, if you're not waking up going, where the fuck am I getting on stage tonight? Comedy's not for you.
When people ask me why I'm not married, why I don't have kids, I tell them because I started comedy at 30. Right? So that's when people start. And you don't even think about getting married. Like, I got to get up. I got to work. It's an obsession. Like you said, it's an obsession. It's all you got to do. And you do it all the time. And then you look up and then you're 40. But fuck, you're good now. You know? But that's the way it was. And I still, when you eliminate all the bullshit, right? Because it's just so many layers of bullshit you have to deal with, whether it be, you know, bookers or agents or egos or this, that, or the other. When you get on stage... That's when it's pure. That's when it's real. When Chappelle went through all that shit, when he went to Africa and blah, 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 when he came back and he did that interview on Inside the Actor's Studio, and he talked about when he got back on stage and he just was like, I'm home. Like, you know, I'm okay. Like, I knew exactly what he's talking about. You know that feeling. When you get on stage, when you walk on stage, anything going on outside of that, and I know you've been doing this as long as me, so you know. You got a fucking death in the family, you got a relationship that just ended, you know, you got, like, whatever real life shit is going on around you, gone, and you're working. I love the work. I love the work. And I get in my head, like, how many shows have I done where I'm like, hey, you know something? I'm the only guy on this show not a fucking millionaire. What did I do wrong? You know what I mean? You know, you had those moments, right, where you're working with five fucking superstars, and you're like, wait a minute, what the fuck?
I got the shitty locker all the way down the fucking corner and shit. These motherfuckers got champagne in their room. I got an apple.
But when you're on stage, none of that shit matters, right? Because that's the game. That's the, it's pure. I love it. I fucking love it. Still.
I love it. I love it.
Sorry, man, that's mine.
There's bits and parts of it. I had a great time at the store last night. I love working out. I love going to the store and there's 60 people.
Yeah.
On a Tuesday. You know, Friday and Saturday, mm-hmm. I want the place to be sold out. Yeah. But for the last 3 months, you go to the store on a Tuesday night, there's 300 people mm-hmm. in there. You can't try fucking new shit on right. stage. You got to stick to the whole reliable. Mm-hmm. And everybody's been up there, so you got to come up with your A shit, or if yeah. not, you're going to die a slow death. And I miss going up there and fucking around. You know, I miss... You know, you have an idea, but then when you take it to the stage, it becomes something else. Oh, shit. And you can't, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, I'm going to go do another set. Sometimes, you know what, let me go home and write this motherfucker
down. Yeah, got to write it down before I forget.
Let me write this motherfucker down word for word.
I used to remember yelling that in the crowd, like, what did I just, write that down. What did I just say? You know, just so somebody would fucking
slip
remind
you a note.
Me.
Yeah, on the way out the window. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, it's such a great animal. I'm, you know. I can't believe I survived 24 years. I can't believe I have a Screen Actors Guild card. Like, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. Like, I made a union for something. Like, remember growing up, people were in the union. Yeah. I'm in the union. I'm in the Actors Union. It don't mean dick. You know, nothing. If I put it in my shoe, nobody will give a fuck. 20 years ago, you had a union card. You go to movies for free.
Yeah.
You got headshots 50% mm-hmm. off. Show up with a fucking union card now. They give you nothing.
No, that's not true. I get discount parking at the airport.
Do you really?
The parking spot gives you 20% off if you have a SAG card.
What's the parking spot with the yellow and
with
black?
With the yellow polka dot.
Fuck that. It's too far. What do you got going on lately?
What do I got going on? I got a pilot. They're shopping with Sci-Fi, so fingers crossed on that. My new Showtime special, Historically Incorrect, is going to be out in February.
Okay.
Just recorded that in May. And grinding, alonzoboden.com. Check it out. Follow me. I love doing this.
You ever wake up in the morning, you ever drive in California and you can't believe you're still here? Like, you look at a palm tree.
Every now and then, man. Every now and then, shit hits you, and you're like, this is fucking unbelievable. I tell people all the time, it beats honest work. You know? I used to do honest work. You know what I mean? Where you get up, you go to the fucking plant, you punch the time clock, and you fucking build airplanes all day, and then you go home, and tomorrow you do it again. You know? That's fucking honest work. And this shit beats the hell out of honest work.
Why do you hate doing that? My cousin did that for the Air Force, but he hated it.
It wasn't a matter of hating it. It wasn't a matter of hating it. It was a good job. It was just that I had something else in me that I didn't even know about.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? Like the comedy thing, I didn't know about. Like if I had known, sometimes I think if I really want to mind fuck myself, I think, wow, what if I had started when I was like 20? When I, you know, in 1982. When the fucking boom was about to, you know what I mean? Like, would I be a fucking millionaire today? I remember George Wallace, who's one of my fucking heroes in comedy. We were at the Laugh Factory, and, you know, I'm doing it. He's like, man, you good. He was around in the 80s. You'd have made some money. But, you know, that's...
I was out here in 84, Doug.
Oh, yeah?
Comedy was not even in my fucking brain.
Right.
I didn't know where to start or who to call. Yeah. I knew nothing. It wasn't even close to. But I knew I didn't like California.
Yeah.
So I knew I wasn't going to end up here, you know. And it's funny you said about, there was two things you said that were pretty interesting. One, that you wanted to, that you're still single, you know.
Yeah.
Listen, man, when I got into comedy, I read that fucking crazy book with that crazy Jewish comic, the one that lived in the fucking Chelsea Hotel and shit. And he did heroin, and he hung out with jazz musicians at night, and Lenny Bruce. And I got to tell you, that was what pushed me over the top, was having no responsibility, being able to come and go when I please, because that's how I was raised, you know what I'm saying? I had kids and a wife. That's the least of my fucking aggravations when I got into comedy.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I got into comedy, not to have that at all. I thought I was going to be like Charles Bronson. One of his movies, he died alone in his little room in Death Wish or whatever movie he was in, Hard Times or whatever. That's what I always thought, man. And then now I got a little baby and a wife. And
yeah, it's great.
And you don't know where it's going to fucking, this journey's going to take you.
One of the things I tell, like, when I'm young comics, because it's funny, like, in the past 5-6 years, I've become the old guy. Like, remember me when too. You were the young guy when you used to ask advice, and now they come to you? And I tell them, if you got a wife or you got a kid, I said, good for you. You got something real. I said, never forget, that shit's real. This is all bullshit. That's real. Fucking love that and hang on to that. Don't fuck that up.
No.
But do this. So good for them. But it's something I didn't do or haven't done yet or whatever. But I respect it, you know.
You know, I'm trying to write a book, and I wrote something about a month ago, and I looked at it. I forgot I had wrote it. I wrote it on this thing I have, Litlift, and it was about dropping my daughter off. I have a daughter that's 25 that we don't talk. And when she was 5, I was just starting to do comedy. I had just gotten the vision. Like, I had started already. I had been doing comedy 18 months, but I was dicking around. I wasn't really working. I read the Judy Carter book.
Yeah.
I was doing little things. I had one two-go joke. But the rest of the time, I was just bullshitting myself. This was something. I was just killing time. But once I went to New York and took a good look at what I needed to do, I said, fuck this. I went back to Colorado. And Colorado was real. Mm-hmm. I had a divorce going on. Me and the wife didn't get along. I mean, I was getting hot. Like, I was getting hot with this bro. I was pushing my buttons. And I made a deal with myself. Every Wednesday and Sunday was when I had her. And before I'd pick her up, I'd roll a joint and I'd put it in the trunk of the car under the tie. And I'd pick up my daughter and have the best time when I'd drop her off. And it would break my heart when I'd drop her off. I'd wait for them to pull away and I'd go in my trunk. I'd take out the joint and I'd go on Route 36. And I'd shoot the demo and I'd smoke that joint. And sometimes I'd cry and sometimes I wouldn't. But I'd force myself to go to an open mic that started at 8. That followed a line dancing class in 1990 fucking 3, just to get me out of that dark place.
Yeah.
It was crazy. And I did drugs later that night. Mm. Don't get me wrong. But a lot of people wouldn't do that. They get depressed and go to fuck home and drink. Mm-hmm. I forced myself those
to
days.
To go out.
Especially on those visitation days. Mm-hmm. That's how I got over the visitation. As soon as I dropped her off, I fucking was headed to an open mic. And on the drive, I'd digest what happened, I'd process it, and I'd fucking let that rage out on stage, and sometimes it worked, and sometimes it didn't. But it made me a comic. I think about how I worked with that pain. That's what you were talking. You know, what's his name? Brett Favre. His father died. What did he do that night? Yeah. He threw 5 fucking touchdowns, did he not? He was pissed. He was hurt. Whatever he was, he played the game.
Yeah.
Most people have said, most people, your father died. You're not playing tonight. You're right. I can't think. This motherfucker said,
he's like, I have to play
tonight.
This
is what you do. This is what we do.
Yeah, we have to get up. We have to get
there's up. So many nights, especially, listen, I'm not the spring buck. I was, you know, when I was 38 and I was doing comedy, I would leave the house, yes, to do comedy, but number two, to get my fix. So it was a twin, and that was part of it. The way to get my fix was to get on stage. That's the only thing that justified me doing what I did. So now I don't do anything. So when I got 11:45, spot Alonzo. I'm 52, you know what I'm saying? I'm tired. I need an aspirin and shit. I got to take like a fucking energy drink or a coffee.
See, that's the other thing. I never did anything. I got sober 5 years before I did comedy, you know? So I've never done comedy high. I've never done it drunk. Like, I've been sober the whole time.
You're a fucking gentleman,
I tell people, I was telling Joe, I said I fucking timed it wrong. You know, I should have went to rehab right after Last Comic Standing. I'd have been a fucking star. They'd been, man, the winner of Last Comics in rehab, I'd still be on TMZ today. I'd be next to Lamar fucking a Kardashian.
It's bad luck.
That's fucking crazy, man. I'm happy you came on today, bro.
Man, thank you. Thank you. We've been trying to put this together. I love you.
Yeah. I love you, too.
I love you. I'm happy to be here. Lee, you fucking talk way too much. You got to turn it down a notch.
Nah, Lee's a fucking savage. I'm headed to fucking Portland, Oregon tonight. I'm fucking very excited to Helium. You work Helium?
Yeah. Helium. No, I haven't done Helium in Portland. I've been booked 3 times. Every time something's come up. So now I'm scheduled to be there in May. I was supposed to be there in December, and they moved me to the Raleigh Club. So I'm doing Raleigh instead. But I've heard great things about it. I love Portland, though. I love the city. I got a lot of friends up
it's
there.
It's amazing. I used to go to Portland like in the mid-90s. You want to shoot
downtown yourself. Portland is fucking phenomenal.
Now?
Yeah.
Now it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Now they changed. This city was like what? It was like where the Joker lived.
Yeah.
In the mid-90s, that's where the Joker... It was cloudy, always raining. But to fucking add to it, the buildings, and now it's beautiful. Yeah. There's people out there. There's food trucks. It's alive. So I'm going to be at Helium. Where are you at this weekend?
This weekend, I am here. I'm up in Lancaster, Friday night, Lancaster Performing Arts Center. And then next week, I'm going to Cabo for Just for Laughs. They're doing a resort week. So it's their first time doing it. It's me, Pete Corielli, Ryan Hamilton, Jim Brewer, and a magician named Ben Seidman.
Perfect.
So we're there all week.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. I'm at Helium, Portland this week and next week at the motherfucking Stress Factory. In New Jersey.
Love the Stress Factory. Tell Vinny I said what's up. Tell Vinny my phone hasn't rung. What the fuck, Vinny?
Yeah, you gotta, you know what? It's like every 18 months, I think.
Yeah, tell Vinny.
It took tell a Vinny while I to get said, me back.
Up? Tell Vinny.
Let's give a shout out to your sponsors here tonight. Number one, Onnit. As usual, the best. I love fucking Onnit. You say, Joey, why do you like Onnit so much? I'll tell you why. This morning I get up, two eggs, wheat, toast, bacon. That's tremendous. But it don't fulfill my fucking needs. You understand me? About 2 hours in, I popped a couple ice cubes, some water, two scoops of hemp force, the chocolate. Bam! I'm fucking there. Maybe a banana, a scoop of peanut butter. That holds me over to about 1 or 2 in the afternoon. When you're a fat fuck, that means a lot in my world. You understand me? You got Shroom Tech. You want energy. They got Shroom Tech Immune if you want to get on a plane and go 6 hours and sit next to Japanese people with fucking masks on. And you're sitting there with no mask. And the whole flight, you're thinking, I ain't got no protection. Yes, you do. Onnit, fucking Shroom Tech Immune. Do me a favor. Go to Onnit. Look at Onnit.com. Go to the complete line of supplements. I get you 10% off the weights, the kettlebells. I can't do nothing for you. But as far as supplements, go take a look at the great line of supplements, whether it's the tea, the testosterone boost, or whether it's the hemp force protein, whatever the fuck you want to look at, go read about it. Tremendous. Each scoop of the hemp force is 16 grams of protein, 2 scoops, 32 with a banana. Stop it, dog. And you throw some weights around, you do some sit-ups, some jumping jacks, you'll whack off. Who's better than you? Go to Onnit.com right now and press in.
Church.
Boom! And get 10% off your first motherfucking order. And if you can sign up for the Stay Onnit program where they mail them right to your house on a monthly. You understand me? So here you go. Hey, it's unbelievable. Nah, this is the wrong fucking copy here. Where's the one with the Teflon and the,
yeah,
and
I have, the material? I told you.
What the fuck happened to it? I had it here the other day. You're throwing curveballs at me and shit. You're making me look bad. Hold on 1 second. I'm sorry, people. Very unprofessional here. You gave me like, here we go. Listen, we all know that sexy starts right from within. Who the fuck are you kidding? That confidence comes from being comfortable. How great it could feel with the underwear is not wrinkling in your ass or whatever the hell, riding up your little muffler. MeUndies gets it. And that's why we've created the world's most comfortable underwear for a daily dose of confidence. You wear underwear daily, right? Or what are you, a filthy animal? No. That's 365 days a year, rain or shine. You need to be extraordinary without an insane price tag. That's where MeUndies comes in. MeUndies understands this, and that's why they've created the world's most comfortable underwear luxury at retail price you'll find nowhere else. When you look good, you feel great. It's a cliche, but who gives a fuck? MeUndies understand that, and that's why they designed this underwear that makes you look and feel fantastic. You know why? Modal. That's why. MeUndies is made from Modal, a fabric that's twice as soft as cotton. That's twice as soft as whatever underwear you got on right now. MeUndies has tons of colors, tons of styles, and it's the only place you can get matching underwears for him and her, or him and him, whatever the fuck you're doing these days. They even release a new design every month. I got my undies on right now. I got the black ones on right now. Tremendous. They feel. I got the black ones with the purple stripe. Anyway, we all know that paying for shipping sucks, right? So MeUndies has removed that from the equation. All orders in the U.S. and Canada, bam, ship for free. MeUndies even has a money-back guarantee. If you don't love your first pair, you get to keep it for free. You literally have nothing to lose. Do me a favor. Go to MeUndies.com right now. Go to MeUndies.com right now and put in
slash
boom and get 20%
go to
MeUndies.com slash Joey. No, go to MeUndies.com slash Joey right now and get 20% off your first order plus free shipping. All right, that's a special offer for all my listeners. Make sure you go to MeUndies.com slash Joey, get 20% off your first order, and tell them that I sent you. All right, what do you want from me? I don't even know what's going on here. No, I got problems, people calling me. They're harassing me. You know what I'm saying? What do they want? They know I got MeUndies on. Go to MeUndies.com right now. The best underwear. Go to Onnit.com. Get 10% off. Alonzo, I love you, brother.
Love you, Joey. Thank
Stay
you,
black and beautiful. Always a pleasure to see you. People calling me. They're bothering me at my fucking house here. This guy's going to torment me now, I guarantee you. For 4 months I've been here, nobody bothers me. Now I got like 8 auditions, CBS wants to see me. It's going to be one of those things, I guarantee you. Put the music on, Lee. What are you waiting on?
Oh, okay.
Oh, what?
Wake him up.
What's going on? What's the problem here? You're slipping.
This show is brought to you by MeUndies. Go to MeUndies.com/Joey. 20% off your order. All the great men's and women's underwear and t-shirts.
I'm getting old, people.
Go to MeUndies.com/Joey. Go to Onnit.com and use code church to get 10% off all the great optimization products.
Some people gave me spitting.
I just want a Picasso in my casa, no my castle. I'm a hassa, no I'm an asshole. I'm never satisfied, can't knock my hustle. I want a brothel, no, I want a brothel, no. I want a wife to fuck me like a prostitute. Let's make love on a million in the dirty hotel with the fan on the ceiling, All for the love of drug dealing, Marble floors, gold ceiling, Oh, what a feeling. Kid, I want a billion. Jeff Koon balloons, I just want to blow up. Condos and my condos, I want to roll up. Christie's with my Missy, live at the MoMA. Bacon, some turkey bacon, smelly aroma. Oh, what a feeling. Oh, what a feeling. It ain't hard to tell, I'm the new Jean Michel. Surrounded by Warhols, my whole team ball. Twin Bugattis outside the Art Basel. I just wanna live life colossal. Leonardo da Vinci flows. Ricardo Tisci, Givenchy clothes. See me throning at the Met. Voguing on these gins of champagne on my breath, yes. House like the Louvre or the Tate Modern. Cause I be going ape at the auction. Oh, what a feeling. Oh, f*** it, I want a trillion. Sleeping every night next to Mona Lisa. The modern day version with better features. Yellow Basquiat in my kitchen corner. Go ahead, lean on that shit. Blue, you on it, Oh, what a feeling. Oh, what a feeling.
Comment tu dis nombre d'or? Touche.
Okay. I never stuck my cock in the fox's box, but damn if I ain't open Pandora's box. They try to slander your man on CNN and Fox. My Mirandas don't stand a chance with cops. Even my own fans like, oh man, stop. I could if I would, but I can't, I'm hot. And you blow, I'm still the man to watch. You blow on my left hand and not. Soon as I step out the booth, the cameras pop. Cool with it till the cannons pop. Now my hand on the Bible on the stand. Got your man in the jam again. Got my hand in cup. I'm like, goddamn, enough. I put down the cans and they ran muck. My hairpin, pear skin, ruptured spleens. Cracked ribs go through cribs and other things.
No sympathy for the king, huh? Cause even talk about your baby crazy, eventually the pendulum swings. Don't forget America, that's how you made me. Come through with the yay mask on, spray everything like Sambo. I won't scratch the Lambo. What's it gonna take for me to go, for you to see I'm the modern day Pablo Picasso, baby.